Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hello, Slackers. I hope you're all good. It is Phil Taggart. It is the Slacker Podcast, season three. And yeah, we're moving rightly through them at the moment. I'm trying to, at the moment, figure out how to get really clear and crisp recordings through the little equipment that I've got, because I'm going to start doing them remotely. Because if I was to actually land over to an artist's house to interview them face to face, I'd probably get arrested or fined. So to complete the episodes of the season, that's definitely what I will do. And I hope you're all taking care of yourselves in these strange and unsettling times. I hope you're all taking care of your neighbors, and you're all like phoning each other. I've phoned so many people since I've been locked down. I'm about 3 weeks into this, and I've spoke to some people on the phone that I don't think I've spoke to in ages. It's amazing, like what boredom will do. Mad love to anybody who's listening to this podcast, who's helping out with relief for the NHS, or just getting their neighbors groceries, or just making the products that we all need. Massive love to all you guys. Right, so this episode is with LaRue, and I haven't really given too many language warnings over the podcasts, but this is probably the filthiest podcast language wise that we've ever done. I had so much fun sitting down chatting to LaRue about this podcast, and she is such a laugh, and she's so honest and so open. And the demo that we get to hear in this of In for the Kill is amazing as well. So here we go, season three of the Slacker Podcast, this episode with LaRue in 3, 2. Oh wait, just before he counts down to one, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, go and do that. If you want to like and review it, please go and do that. And if you want to become a Patreon of the podcast, go to patreon.com/slackerpodcast. I'm going to be putting up special mixes up there. I'm even thinking about doing some sort of sly little bits up there that listeners of my radio show might like. And yeah, I've got some big ideas for the Patreon. So if you go and sign up to that, I'll send you awesome stuff. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
This is my first Slacker Podcast of 2020.
Fuck, I don't.
It's the first. It's, weird, it's the first time I've said that out loud.
2020. I really like it. I'm really looking forward to this one now.
It's sci-fi.
It is sci-fi,
isn't it? How shall I address you today, LaRue, Eleanor, Ellie?
Ellie's fine, I think.
Ellie, okay,
yeah.
I feel like we've
LaRue. I never really know what's right anymore, because I hate people thinking it's a duo. It drives me mad. And then I'm like, well, if people just call, I mean, I am obviously LaRue. It's not like an entity that exists outside of me. It's a character I created. But I think obviously, because it was presented as a like duo-y band thing for a while, it's got really confusing and it's so unnecessary. And I just feel like this needs to be cleared up now in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, do you think the Beastie Boys have the same like a problem with that? They're like going, okay, Beastie Boys, and there's all three of them, and they're like going, which one do you mean?
Yeah, which exactly. I don't know what the best way to deal with it is, but I also don't want people to refer to me as LaRue to my face, because it's really weird.
Like, has that ever happened with like your family or friends, where somebody's been like, LaRue, get downstairs and
that's
get your tea?
Actually, thank God that's never happened.
No,
that would be really weird. I have had like friends I haven't seen for many years or something be like, oh, should I call you LaRue? I'm like, please don't do that. That's really weird.
Yeah, that is
that's really strange.
Do you think like Lady Gaga's friends call her Gaga?
I think that's because people like that are weird. Yeah. I think that's like, there's a certain level of celebrity where it all just gets really creepy, and everyone's got weird pseudonyms, and like you're not allowed to look in their eyes and stuff. And I don't live in that world.
You're not part of that world. What's the term they use? Lost in celebrity.
Yeah, there's just loss. I mean, you've bound to have met a few people
who are like lost in celebrity.
Yeah, most of them. All my friends are still my friends from before, because I've tried. I really have tried. Like, I've thought maybe it's me, maybe it's my insecurities, maybe it's, you know, maybe I'm just not very cool. Maybe I'm not very funny. Maybe nobody likes me. Maybe it's that. And then I think, no, it's actually not that. It's that I don't really like them. Like, I think they're not normal enough for me to like them.
When I started at Radio 1, I thought I was very young, like in the early 20s. And I thought, I'd taken over from Nick Grimshaw on the 10 p.m. show. And I thought, well, this is what you're meant to do. You're meant to go to celebrity parties. So for about two or three months, I did it. And I was going to celebrity parties with Akari Styles and this, that, and the other. And I hated it. And I got really drunk at all of them just to get through the night.
Just to get through it.
And
right?
I obviously was probably a ball bag several times. I was like, this is not for me.
Yeah, I did exactly the same thing. Found myself at, you know, certain parties and after party things, and you know, so and so's going back to so and so's house, and you just think, what the hell am I doing?
I always imagine,
I've got friends already, and I don't know these people, and they don't know me, and we're all pretending like we know each other, and I don't really know why. And there's also a weird sense and air of tension and competition in the air, which I really don't like. It's like, that is really odd side of it that I can't get my head around. And then it's the consistent thing of like, when you do think you've made a connection with somebody, you think it's like vaguely normal. The next time you see them, they act like they've never met you before in their life. It's the weirdest thing. No. It's like trying to be friends with psychopaths. It's just so odd. I can't understand it. It's so up and down as well. It's like one minute, you know, you think you're like best mates, and then the next minute they're like, sorry, what?
Jonathan Ross throws this Halloween party, and like, he only invites people that are like super, super like either relevant or really famous.
That's and no I, wonder just, I haven't I, ever been there.
I just imagine. But don't worry, I have another. And
you can come to my party. All right,
okay, just go down to like the Shillelagh, the Irish boozer.
Yeah, no problem. That's it.
Pot of Pringles after. But I just imagine like the stress of like David Walliams running about the place and like some new supermodel
like
running about.
A China
and
shop.
I'm like, fuck that. Not in a million years.
It freaked me out.
Yeah. So, right. Like, so we're going for a celebrity party after this.
Yeah, obviously.
I mean, we are saying this, like, we are actually in High Street Kensington.
Yeah, I know, in a record label. Yeah,
it's not like we're sitting in a bin in, like, you know, Larne in Northern
Ireland. I don't mind having a nice life. It just doesn't have to be filled with people I don't understand.
Yeah, fair.
You know, I can't connect with at all.
So right, let's do as we always do, and we're going to kick off with the demo, and we're going to actually, for the first time in the Slacker podcast, in the second part of the podcast, we're going to play a demo from the new album as well, and some maybe some voice clips as well. But let's it's at the start. I'm pretty like pedantic when it comes to the chronological order of things, so let's kick in with this. I'll play a little blast of it. We can't have a summer. That was a demo of In for the Kill.
Sounds like the finished version, really, with a weird guitar in it. I noticed that last night when I was checking it out.
I was going to say, what is the first thing that comes to your head when you hear it?
Being with Ben. And being young. I don't know where the last 10 years went. I don't, honestly don't. That could be it. That could be last week. As far as I'm concerned, it's starting to scare me quite a lot, actually, because it really, I've only just recovered from that time. And it's taken me like 10 years, and I do feel a huge lapse of time in a way that does actually sort of scare me. It's almost like I've woken up from a coma and I'm like, what the hell? I've lost 10 years. Are you joking?
Is it difficult to listen to it, or is it like, nostalgia? Because
I love it. I'm really proud of that tune.
That was like a bona fide hit, but like, you know, I played in bands for years and I go back and listen to my old bands, like EPs, every once in a while, normally after a bottle of wine.
Yeah, usually.
Yeah. Can you remember writing that song and like how it sort of came about and that recording process that you did?
That was really late in the recording process. I wrote the first verse and the chorus in my bedroom, but before I'd ever played it to Ben.
What'd you write it on? Guitar?
Guitar, yeah, my acoustic guitar. I was in my bedroom in my parents' house at home. you know, the family home kind of thing. And I don't actually know if I've ever told this story before publicly, but it feels maybe like the right time to sell it now. Because it displays so much about how sometimes thoughtless and not thoughtless actually at all, but how sort of serendipitous and coincidental songwriting can be, not always. but my mum is the kind of person that always cuts things out of the newspaper and she's like, oh, you should read this. And I never, ever read it, ever. There's just like these, there's just these newspaper clippings everywhere. I've never read them. Yeah. She said her mum used to do the same thing. I think maybe she used to read them, but I don't read anything. I find reading a real chore.
You're like, and, cool, mum, thanks.
Yeah, cheers. And it was always about stuff that she thought maybe I'd find really interesting, but in my mind I was like, no, that's not interesting to me. So anyway, she'd cut out an article about the Killers from The Guardian, because we're that middle class. And I just didn't read it. I've still never read it to this day. But the article was called In for the Kill. And it was on the floor of my bedroom because I wasn't reading it. It was just on the floor, like everything else was on the floor.
Yeah.
And I was sat on the edge of my bed. And I was just, basically, I'd written this chord sequence and I'd been really thinking about punk music. Ben had been talking to me about punk and the energy of punk. And he was like, you know, because a lot of my stuff was at the beginning was quite sort of slow and I was a bit shy sounding. And we were just trying to get some more like spunk out of me, basically, mm-hmm. you know. And I knew it was there because I was so aggressive in my, you know, speaking life. So everyone knew it was there. It's just like, well, you know, bring it out. Anyway, so I was sort of doing some exercises with myself. Been listening to a lot of The Cure and like Gang of Four as well, who have actually just done a cover of Damaged Goods. Because
oh, I love
he knows
that band.
Yeah, because yeah. he knows how much of an influence it was in In for the Kill, he's actually just asked me to do a cover of it. So I've just done a cover of that in a kind of Grace Jonesy like African way.
Wow.
Which I'm really, really pleased with. And it's the first track I've actually mixed and produced completely and utterly on my own, like totally mixed it on my own, which is really nice. But I was thinking about all those kind of tunes and that kind of aggression and that kind of sparseness. And I just started playing the chords I'd written in a kind of more pacey way, in a kind of style of strumming. And I kind of had that snare in my head. And I'd written, like I say, the first verse already. And I was like, I don't know what to put there. I looked at the floor and I was literally like, that'll fucking do. Going in for the kill. And that was that.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's actually kind of because of the Killers, which is a bit weird. Told Brandon Flowers
have
that
you?
Because I felt weird about it.
What was his reaction?
I don't know. I got Alan Moulder to tell him. I don't know what his reaction was. I just felt bad if he didn't know because it's like, I'd want to know.
As if like the Killers hadn't enough to do with indie music in like 2008, 2009.
I loved that album A Hot Fuss. Yeah, and I was like,
but they're also to blame for your
They're also to blame
song.
Kind of for In for the Kill. In a, kind of. I mean, for the title at least. I mean, who knows? I mean, I was pretty stabby at that time in my mind. You know, I might have come up with In for the Kill anyway, but it's pretty unlikely when you think about it. It's probably mainly because my mum cut out an article from
The Guardian. I think I'd blame your mum more than I'd blame the killers because she just...
And she's the one that introduced me to Hot Fuss as well. So actually, my mum's actually the cool one. I'm just a guitar player.
What does your mum think of your music? Like, does she critique it?
No.
Does she come to your shows?
If she does, she doesn't do it to my face. Yeah, they love it. They're very proud. They're very proud people, you know, they are, you know. I don't know if they'd like listen to my music if it wasn't by me. Probably not. But I don't know. I mean, grew up listening to a lot of like Eurythmics and Stevie Wonder and stuff like that. So
they're like, they've got tasteful music, like they're not into...
No, they've got really good taste. Like my dad brought me up on a lot of like rock and roll and bluegrass and stuff like that. Like he was very much telling me about that and folk music and Joni Mitchell and Bob Dylan and Crosby, Stills, Nash and Young, Chuck Berry and like just...
That stuff stands the test of time. Yeah. Like I still go back to... Like I was going back to Dylan yesterday.
Yeah. It's like he was just like, you got to know about this. It was literally like teaching. It was like, if you don't know about this, there's something like wrong. You're not my daughter. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you're going to know about this and you're going to understand it and you're going to like it. And I did. And he really inspired me as a guitar player to play guitar. I just thought playing guitar was the coolest thing. I still do pretty much. Anyone could do but what it, you like it, if you do it well, you know, like really well and you develop your own style. I think that's really cool.
Who was the person that you saw play guitar and you thought, wow, that's a bit of me. I got to get into this.
Well, the first time I think that properly happened was when I heard funk. I think like I'd loved rock and roll and I've loved Buddy Holly and I loved, you know, the first thing I learned on guitar was Peggy Sue. We're talking like serious basic shit here.
Oh my God, yeah. But like, Buddy Holly's chord changes are actually
they're
really quick and actually a lot more difficult than you would think.
Well, I used to really enjoy that bit that went dun 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 dun. I used to really like that bit, you know, and getting that bit as quickly as I could. I just thought it was really cool, and he taught me various things like Johnny B. Goode and stuff like that. And he once taught me this beautiful plucking piece from like I think it was a Fairport Convention song or something. I mean, it was pretty. I've never really listened to new music my whole life. I'm not going to lie, and I still kind of don't. Well, this is the thing people say, well, why don't you like new music? Is it because you're jealous of it? Is it because you're competing? Is it because of this? Is it because of that? You know, people that are trying to wind me up. I'm like, no, that's not why. When I hear something that gives me the same feeling as like Dirty Mind by Prince, I'll let you know. I'll let you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's not happened yet. That's not my problem. It's not because I'm putting a barrier up. It's not because I'm shunning it or I'm not letting the feeling in. It's because it's not happening, you know? And there's not much I can do about it.
Yeah, exactly. You're not going to falsify it.
Yeah,
and just go,
oh, yeah, this is amazing.
You go on Pitchfork going, yeah, I love this band.
Yeah.
Well, the one that sort of gets on my nerves a little bit is when somebody like Noel Gallagher, and this comes out quite a lot. Normally it's the kind of the rock stars who've been doing it for decades and decades and decades are in their 60s and 70s are like, there's no good indie bands around anymore. There's no good. And you're like going, how the fuck would you know?
Yeah, how would you know? Seriously.
Like, you've been in the Rolling Stones or like, you know, bad example, but like, you know, you shouldn't be out searching for that sort of stuff anyway.
Like Fontaine's DC are like, fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Just absolute bullshit.
Yeah, big time. I mean, I could rhyme off about 20, but...
Yeah, I can't.
It's my job. Much, do you know what I mean? Like, you can write in for The Kill and I can play a load of bands that'll be like headlining a 50-capacity venue in about
year,
2 years.
Yeah.
What was the first instrument did you have? Was it a guitar?
Yeah, it was a guitar. I tried with the piano, but I just can't read music. It's like reading Japanese upside down or something, you know.
Yeah.
Like, what?
No, I'm with you on that.
It's just years of music teachers getting so frustrated, Just they actually, two of them were like, I can't teach your daughter anymore. I actually can't handle it. And I really don't blame them.
Here's the question. Were you good at math?
No.
See, this is what I think. If you're bad at
I have like numeracy math, dyslexia.
Yeah, well, like it took me about 4 goes to get my GCSE math, right?
Okay.
And I couldn't understand music either, like the practical side of it. And I think there's definitely a correlation between the practical
there
side of music.
Is.
But I could play it.
Yeah. No, I can hear it. And I can hear all the shapes. You know, I can hear all the shapes. I can hear the gaps between the frets. I can hear the gaps between the notes. it's not a problem. And I can hear all the patterns and the shapes. I can just hear them all. They're like a landscape. They've got visuals to me. That's just not a problem. You know, I know roughly what anything is going to look like on an instrument or feel like, you know, and often actually I'll be singing something and your instinct, not using your brain. I think your brain is like a bit null and void when it comes to music. And I think when people try and use their brain with music, you can really hear it. And I think a lot more music is getting thought about as well because of the pressure to have a hit and mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And I feel like actually I've noticed so many times I'll be thinking of a chord in my head because I'll be thinking of a melody and I'll pick up the guitar and it's the exact chord that I play. And it's like my hand somehow knows roughly where it is on the fretboard, mm-hmm. but not just roughly, like it just knows, you know, but it's not something I've learned or something I can teach or something I've ever thought about ever.
But that method of songwriting, people spend thousands going to university to learn it, and you can't.
You've either got it or you haven't. Sorry, I hate to break it to anyone who's listening to this, trying to learn how to write. But you've either, it's a two-pronged thing. You've kind of either got it or you haven't, but at the same time, it's also about being loose and open enough. Like, I think it is possible to put a very talented person in the wrong environment and to get nothing out of mm-hmm. them. Like, I've been in that environment before. And I do think it's possible to have somebody that's got real potential and just put them in the wrong environment and not get the right thing out of them.
So that's why I couldn't write any songs.
Yeah. That's why I feel.
Yeah, I think I've got like one song that I wrote that I used to take out at parties all the time, and everybody would be like, going, oh, for fuck's sake, the party's over, get out.
Nobody wants anyone to sing a song at a party, do
no,
they?
No, big
that's
time.
It's really not happening. Put the cajon away.
Yeah. What was the first gig that you played? Was it a solo gig? Were you playing folk music at it, or were you straight in on the pop?
Technically, it would have been open mic night in my local area, technically.
I don't like open mic nights.
Neither do I, mate. I don't think anyone likes them. They encourage a kind of artist that I don't enjoy. I don't enjoy a kind of...
You don't like that David Gray, Newton Faulkner?
It's weird that I don't
Jack
like
Johnson.
That, isn't it? It's weird. Mm. Jack, it makes me feel sick even you saying them. Like nothing, I'm sure they're lovely people, but wow, that's some bad music right there. I mean, it's not bad, it's just so dull. I just think that I really feel like open mic nights and like campfires just encourage a kind of music that just doesn't need to exist anymore, and it could just stop.
I'm not shocked.
You know?
I'm not shocked you think like that.
No, it's
like
funny.
I've like followed your career the whole way through, and like I can, you know, some artists you will see, you can spot that they're going to do a change and they're going to do like a
no. It's never going to
with
never,
you. It's like
not acoustic
fuck
guitar.
This,
yeah.
I'm going straight in.
Yeah,
the whole
seriously.
Way.
I'm going all the way, and then when I can't do this anymore because I'm too old. I'll just disappear, or I'll be like a mixer, or I don't know, something.
Just keep going.
Madonna's not making it look great, I'm not gonna lie. I just feel like
Madonna
there is a
the
dignity
same age as
issue.
My mom,
there's so a dignity issue, no?
Do you reckon?
Do you?
I don't know, because like I can speak from a male perspective, right?
And this is not me being like, oh, women are old and they can't do things when they're old.
I'll speak from the male perspective, you speak from the female perspective.
Okay.
I feel like we're both
balanced.
We're both balanced on that, right? like, I'm what, 32? And I played in indie bands from 14 till about 23.
Mm.
And I kind of feel like if you haven't done it by 32, it's probably not going
to
happen. And that might sound really sad, like, and people might get pissed off. But
you.
I mean,
unless you're like Philip Glass.
Yeah,
or
no,
you
no.
Want to be like really weird, or
if you move into like composing or like electronic music or dance music, you could be 110.
No one knows what your face looks like anyway.
And all those DJs that are going out are all about 50.
Totally. No one cares how old Orbital are, for instance. You know?
Can't be a skinny indie boy in your 30s. It's metabolism tells you it can't happen.
Metabolism.
Do you know what I mean?
What are the horrors going to be like when they're like...
I still think they'll look pretty good, actually.
You think, yeah. They probably will, won't they?
If you look at, like, Bobby Gillespie from Primal Scream...
Actually, yeah, that's very true.
I reckon Forrest Badwell...
What diet is that? Let's not go into it.
Well, what do you think about, like female artists growing older, like as we're talking about?
I think it's great watching a woman grow older and mature, but I think there's a difference between that and also still trying to look like you're... keeping up with some kind of visual youth norm or whatever. Like for me, I'll have an element of that because, you know, with LaRue, it's a Peter Pan type situation, you know. When I'm being her, no, I can't see her at 48. I'm not going to lie. I just can't.
It kind of helps that you probably still get ID'd.
Like, I've never been ID'd in my life. I love the way everyone thinks I look really young and I'm like,
you
oh,
do though.
Wow. So thank you. I'm not, I'm just going to take that. I'm just going
to
take it.
But I feel like you have to play the hand that you're dealt.
Yeah.
Like if in any sort of creative atmosphere, if you try to act like something you're not, then you'll get found out and it'll look shit.
And it looks weird.
It's okay to be something that you're not, as in like a bigger version of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You can, like, anybody who steps on stage is 50%, 80%, 100% more mental than they normally are, but it's still them.
Yeah, totally.
So I'm fine with that. But if you're like, yeah, if you want to completely change, like I've seen bands that will only write stuff because it's in fashion. And they'll change from electro to folk. And where are they now? Nowhere.
No, I'd never do that. I would never do that. But I also don't like it when bands like an ex keep the same style for like four albums. It's like that really, really winds me up for some reason. But no, I don't feel like... I just feel like as a woman, personally, for me, I would like to not seem like I'm clinging on to something.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, live and my public image, at a certain age, I'd quite like to just have it happen naturally and for me to move naturally into another area of music. Like, because I am into the engineering technical side of studios, I really, really, really enjoy listening to records in that different, slightly different way, not from a writing or arranging perspective. And I would really like to have a studio at the end of my life and spend more time dealing with that stuff, you know, maybe doing mixes for other people, maybe producing other acts, I don't know. But I just feel like that will make more sense for me than being 65 and being like the new LaRue tour, do you know what I mean? I just think it's a bit weird. Yeah. I don't, just for me personally, I can't see it. I really can't
Zimmer
see it.
Zimmer frame too. Like, is that a dream though, like to like have this big studio in the country where you can like live beside it and roll in.
Yep, that's the exact dream that I have. Yeah, I love Devon and I really, really don't like pollution and I really, really like seeing the horizon and I like animals and I don't really want children. I've known that for quite a long time.
Mm.
And I just feel like, for me, music is everything and I want to spend as much of my life doing it as humanly possible. Like every second, I want to know as much as I can by the time I've died. You know, I don't want to die and be like, oh, I wish I knew how to use that or how to do that or how to play the saxophone or how to... So many things that I want to do. I'm just like...
On your deathbed with a theremin beside you.
Yeah, just like, I'm going to get it. you know, I have a lot of ambitions in music. They're not all necessarily public ambitions or like LaRue ambitions. They're just, I really want to hone my craft in so many ways. I so enjoy listening to a record with a mixed perspective or production perspective. I kind of enjoy it just as much, if not more, as all the other bits, you know.
Well, that's great, because like I run a record label, I'll just send over all the mixes that they've done.
Yeah. My fee is...
the record label has shut down due to bankruptcy. What was the track that kicked it all off? Was it In For The Kill or...
It was Quicksand, really.
Was it Quicksand,
yeah? Well, I mean, you know, it was a trio, you know. They each fed into each other. You know, I think Bulletproof could have come out cold and it still would have probably been a hit. But I do think the build-up and the image and everything was really important leading into that.
Mm-hmm.
Coming out with Quicksand on Kitsune was really important for me because I was quite ashamed, actually, at the time of being signed to a major record label. Like, I never desired to be that type of commercial ever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was a bit like... You know, I liked Ed Banger stuff and I was just obsessed with like French electro and I was a bit like, I kind of want it to look a bit more like the world that I see in my head.
There was no cooler label in 2009 than Kitsune.
There was no, exactly. There's nothing.
I think they were doing like early Tudor Cinema Club stuff.
Yeah, there's nothing like that now. Like, there's no scenes anymore. Like, it's not like I can, and this is, I think, where I find LaRue a bit more difficult nowadays because there's like, For me, I react to stuff that I love and I react to stuff that I think is fucking cool. It's really hard when I don't think much is fucking cool. Like, it is genuinely difficult. That's not me moaning about stuff or saying everything's shit or anything, but it is hard because from 2007 to like 2009, there was so much stuff, varied stuff going on.
It was the tail end of new rave.
Yeah, it was.
And then CSS and Klaxons and Theatre of the Pier.
And there was like a big crossover going on.
That was like the lamest genre of all time, looking back on it.
It was actually really awful.
Everybody was wearing
really awful.
Like, you know, when you think of like fashion, like punk fashion and gothic fashion, it was Topman t-shirts.
It was awful.
And neon face paint.
Yeah, it was genuinely awful.
It was really the shittest scene of all
time. It really was.
And I was like, guilty. I was like perfect age for it as well. Oh, yeah. I was right in the middle of it.
I loved it. But obviously
enemy
looking
tour,
back.
Here we come.
Oh yeah, I did an enemy tour, did all of that. But at least, I mean, it was crap. You're absolutely right.
It was a scene though.
But it was a scene. And there was at least something to react to. Now it's like, release a record into a black hole and see if everyone gets it or not. You know, or just do what everyone else is doing.
Like, yeah, but that's not your style.
Of course it's not. It's never going to happen. Like, that's literally never. No one ever has that conversation with me, obviously.
Did they in the early days, though? Like, when obviously you arrived and Ben arrived with these tracks. People at record labels normally want to justify their job by going, you should do this, you should do that. Did they go to you going, we want to shave your head and we want to put you on tour with the Damned?
I mean, to be fair, can you imagine? Awful. To be fair, they kind of didn't actually. They wanted me to like get some clothes that weren't from like charity vintage shops, you know, stuff like that. And like maybe just work out the, you know, I had my style, obviously, but we just needed a bit more of a polished version of it because it was a bit like higgledy-piggledy. So I didn't have any cash, obviously, to play with. And then, not really. I mean, they were quite, because that was all quite big at the time, they were sort of quite happy to do what we wanted to do. That stuff all started to happen around the second album. That's when that all started to happen. Yeah. You know, DJ Fresh this, Calvin Harris that, blah, blah. You know, we think you should do this. You should have an actor. That was my favourite. You should have an actor in one of your videos because they'll be more famous than you, basically. And everyone will watch the video to watch the actor. I was like, that's not really the kind of conversation I want to be having.
Someone get me Phil Mitchell on line one.
Come here.
Let's get him.
I was just picturing like Ron Weasley and it was just really bothering me.
But maybe the reason that people were throwing around those DJ names is like DJ Fresh and Calvin Harris in the second record is because on the first record, like the remixes of In For The Kill, ended up smashing it. Like, was it Scream and Skrillex?
Yeah, but we all know you can't have those moments twice. Like, everybody knows that. And I think it's always the fall down of business people to look at a pattern and go, that worked, let's copy it. You know, it's like, you can't copy yourself. Do you know what I mean? That's ridiculous. And also, it has to be something that happens in the moment. Like, the Scream remix worked because dubstep was having a rise at that time. Mm-hmm. Scream was having a rise. All eyes were on him and I. And it was just the perfect catalyst. But you can't recreate those moments. And I had this argument so many times with label and management and various people, you know, where you knew what they were saying was just, write Bulletproof Number Two. And I'm like, there is no such thing as Bulletproof Number Two.
It's hard to take
a
pragmatic look, as the record label's trying to do, on something that is art at the end of the day.
You just can't. I mean, it's like, and I'm really not comparing myself to this. My God, I have to caveat this, but I'm just trying to think of an analogy that makes it make, you know, more sense to people that are like, but why can't you ride Bulletproof Two? Because I've had fans say it to me as well. And it's like, I don't really like where Hockney has gone, right? Mm-hmm. I just like the pools. I'm not going to lie. Let's just say I just like the pools and the palm trees and that basic shit that everyone relates to Hockney, right?
Yeah.
But you can't keep doing pools. Do you know what I mean? Like, you just can't. You can't just do another pool and another pool and another pool and another. You just can't. And it's like, I respect and understand that he has to move on. And some people love what he's doing on the iPad.
The pool's always there if you want it.
It's always there.
Go and look at it.
Exactly. Exactly. Again, not comparing myself to Hockney because it really sounds like I am and I'm so not. But you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly. Like, if somebody wants to hear In For The Kill again, go go and listen to it again.
Fucking put it on. Add to the streams.
Was the first album like, did it take you by surprise how well it did, or were you ready for it?
It's like both. It was really odd. I was thinking about this yesterday in the bath, as I do every day, pretty much. I think not about this particular thing. That'd be weird. but I think I was surprised and really not surprised. I knew what I had. We knew what we had in our hands. And also, I was really arrogant little shit. So, of course, I thought I was the dog's bollocks. But at the same time, I was very... I didn't mind the success so much that Bulletproof had, right? But I didn't like what it meant for me as a human. Mm-hmm. I didn't like that it meant that I had to go on these stupid shows where I had to talk like a child, you know, and be talked to like a child and like, oh my God, hi, la, 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 you're in a room, la, la, how do you do your hair? How do you use hairspray? And I was like, I actually do have a brain.
I'm trying to like, as you're saying it, I'm trying to figure out which ones it was. And I was like, Pop World.
You know, but there was loads. Just everywhere I go now, I'm just being asked stupid fucking questions. I'm being asked to do things that I don't think have much.
The state of music journalism
is just not cool in any way.
In a lot of those festivals, basically, if you're at a festival interviewing somebody, if you're an artist, they're probably 99% of the time going to be really shit questions.
Awful. Yeah.
How did you do your name? Who else are you going to see on the bill today?
Yeah, no one, clearly. No one watches anyone.
We're going back to the bus.
You know, yeah, exactly. I'm going to sleep.
But like it did, it came in like a whirlwind and like it hit, like I think I was again perfect age for all those tracks. So I was like
you're basically my age.
Yeah, massive fan. And it just seemed like it was all on the rise. Like it surely there must have been a couple of pinch yourself moments where you were like going, what the flip is going on?
Yeah, but I don't think I enjoyed it at the time, you know. I think that's my one, it's not a regret because I can't go back and enjoy it. I still wouldn't enjoy it. I think that's why I have a bit of a weird, it's a bit of an odd sort of turmoil thing I've got inside with it where I'm like, okay, but let's just say you went back now knowing what you know. I'd still feel like I'm being treated like an idiot.
Yeah.
Like I still feel more, the problem is that I really hate being talked to like a child and I really hate being made to talk like a child and you literally have to do it everywhere you go. If children like your song, you're kind of fucked. It's also amazing because you've got loads of kids liking your song and it's more sales and it's brilliant and I'm not complaining, but it just didn't suit me as a personality. I'm not the kind of person that can just put on a smile and like, you know, pretend everything's
you can't just play up
hunky dory. Do you know what I mean? I just can't. I'm like, you're a bunch of twats.
Have you had a meltdown like during an interview?
Yeah, not
like,
during an interview, but no. I've had loads of meltdowns. Yeah.
Oh yeah. I mean, I have a couple of meltdowns. Week, yeah. I have a couple of meltdowns a month. Like that.
Yeah, I was gonna say.
I think if it's in your nature, it's in your nature. Like.
Yeah. No, I've never had a meltdown in an interview because I'm too polite. I would just be like in my head. Oh my God.
I had a meltdown on the other side of the.
Really?
On the other side of an interview. There was a band that were mocking my accent down the phone. It was Parquet Courts.
No way.
Yeah, and they were being really rude. And I made them the single of the week that week. And they were every question I was asking them to do a Northern Irish accent to the back of the bus on the phone. And I told them to go fuck themselves.
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank God it wasn't live.
Yeah,
I turned around, my producer was like sitting there with a red head going, there's no protocol for this. I don't know what to do.
I've always kind of wanted to lose it in an interview, but I never have. I always feel a bit too bad. I mean, I've definitely said like, I'm not answering that question. It's completely ridiculous before, but that's fine.
What's your favorite?
I'm generally
color?
Quite polite. Yeah.
And speaking of going full Kanye, you did a collaboration with Kanye in the sort of.
The collaboration's actually too much of a strong word.
Is it?
I turned up and did what I was told, kind of.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it? That was like 2009 as well, wasn't it?
I actually think it was the end of 2010.
Right. Like
maybe even 2011, you know, I'm not sure.
Was 2010-11 Kanye the same sort of Kanye that we see in the media today? Like the
seemed so
all encompassing kind of mad maverick.
Yeah, I mean, again, like the beginning of the interview, he's one of those people that's not 100% normal. I mean,
no, he's not.
He's definitely not 100% normal.
Because
it's kind of fascinating. It's a fascinating world to be in for like you know, a few days. It was like a week I was with him.
You get to know somebody in a week, though.
No, like, you don't.
No, really?
Oh, no. Oh, no, you don't. No, no, you really don't.
What were you just like,
you
lock,
can't talk
lock
about
booth?
Anything normal. You can't just have a normal conversation. I didn't manage to anyway. Like, I yeah. found it impossible. He's on show, like, 24 hours a day. So, you
so that's just him?
Yeah, it's just it's just him. And it's also kind of amazing to be around. You know, I'll never be around anything like that again. Like, it was really strange, you know.
You've picked some...
He kind of wants it to be strange as well. That's kind of what I got from it. I was like, you want this to be weird. You want people to walk away saying that's really weird. But then I did walk away saying it was quite weird. One of his friends that I knew afterwards asked me if... You know, he kind of looked at me like it was weird, wasn't it? And I was like, yeah, it was pretty weird, you know. And I saw a couple of these things happen and a couple of this happened and this happened. And I just said I found it all a bit strange. And then he, like, told him and then they made me write an apology email to them. So it's quite creepy.
To Kanye?
Yeah. I remember writing
what
it.
What an asshole.
I sat there on my sofa, like what? Lolling the, to myself. It's like, dear Kanye.
The person who told on you.
They told on me.
That's so playground shit. Like,
yeah, I know.
Hold it tight.
That's what I'm saying. Why do you think that's what I'm saying? I don't trust anyone. I'm literally like, everyone who's in the public eye is like weird. They're just fucking weird.
What did you write in the email?
Oh, it was just ridiculous. I just wrote it all with a massive grin on my face. You know, but they do genuinely have quite a lot of power. I was like, I think I actually am going to apologize,
yeah.
You know, because I was like, doesn't snow skin off my nose. Also,
if I spent a weird week with somebody,
hilarious.
And, yeah, if I spent a weird week with somebody and they ended up saying something and got back to them, I would apologize too. I'd probably send them something.
Yeah, no, fuck that.
A finger.
No, fuck that. Because also, no, it wasn't like that. And also, I was like, look, I didn't say anything bad about him. I was like, I just saw some behaviour that wasn't directed towards me, but I saw some behaviour that I can't approve of as a fellow human being.
Sure.
I'm not going to go into it.
Okay.
But I saw some behaviour that I was like, found upsetting.
Yeah.
Unsettling.
Uh-huh.
And I that's all I said. You know, I said he was absolutely lovely to me because he was, because I'm a fellow, you know, like it's a hierarchical situation. I don't know what to say. I don't like hierarchy and I'm not going to sit here and pretend I do. And I'm not going to also be this, what's it called? Conspiracy of silence or whatever, where everyone pretends that everything's fucking normal when it's just blatantly not.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not that person that can, I can't cover shit up. It doesn't work.
You pick your collaboration so well. Like when I was going through it, I totally forgot. Like you were on the Tyler record last year with Igor. But going back to the very beginning, the sort of the first collab was really with Ben. Like how did you two guys like sort of start up?
Well, I met one of his friends. I was out like partying, basically getting really high with some of my sister's friends. My sister wasn't there, but I'd sort of gone to a party in Brixton that I wasn't really supposed to be at. I was only like 17 or something. And I went with my friend Tag from school. We were just really looking for somewhere to get high for like New Year's Eve.
Not basically it.
No, like...
Other stuff?
Actually get high, yeah.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm so from the country, aren't I? Like, I'm like going,
what do you mean about getting high? not like heroin or anything weird like that, but, you know, I was a party girl when I was younger.
Oh, you're from London. Everybody from London does crack, right?
Yeah, exactly, right?
I'm joking.
but, yeah, I don't know. We just wanted to stay out late and, like, dance and whatever. And there was nowhere really we could go, and we knew that we could get into this place and stay there, and we wouldn't be bothered or chucked out. And I ended up upstairs on my own, and my sister's friend came and found me, and she was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I don't know, I'm just up here on my own, dancing. I don't really know what to do. I can't go home on my own because I'm like, she says, gurning. And I was just like, I can't go home. And she said, well, come and hang out with me in the office. You know, I know the guy that owns this place, the pub. And I was like, oh, okay, cool, all right, I'll do that. So I went into his office and we were just sitting in there, you know, smoking cigarettes and chatting absolute shite. And then somebody said, you know, you should play guitar, there's no music in here. And I was like, that's not the kind of music anyone wants to hear right now.
You told me you don't like playing guitar at parties is lame.
I don't, it is lame. That's what I said. I said, that's lame. I literally said, that's lame. Even at 17, I was like, that's lame. No one really wants me to do that, do they? But they sort of did. And I said, I'm not singing. That's taking it way too far. I said, I'll play some chords, like background music. Mm-hmm. But I don't want everyone to like turn around and listen to my song. Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I just played some chords. And then Jason was like, apparently you're really good at singing or something. And I was like, well, whatever. I'm not very good at like responding to that. Anyway, I don't know. Something happened and he heard something and he was like, you should talk to my friend Ben. He's been looking for female artists to work with for ages because Ben was always looking for people to work with. And I said, okay, cool. But then he never gave me his phone number or anything. So I called the pub like every day for 2 months.
God, you were keen.
Yeah, right? Really, really, really keen. I mean, I'd been keen since I was four. I did used to say when I was four, like, I will be a songwriter and it will work. Like, there's no question in my mind. I've never doubted what I'll do for a living, ever. Not for 1 second. So this wasn't abnormal to me. I was just like, well, now I've really got an opportunity. I can go and take it. So I called the pub every day for like 2 months. And then finally around just around like Valentine's Day or something, so it must have been a bit less than 2 months, I just finally got through to him and he said, yeah, call Jason. And I called Jason. Jason was like, fucking hell, how long have you been trying to get hold of me? And I was like, ages, fucking ages. And he was like, well, look, if you've got the guts, here's Ben's phone number, just call him. And I was like, all right, I've got the guts. What do you mean you've got the guts? Fucking, of course I've got the guts to make a phone call. And I was like, such an arrogant little shit.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I'll do it.
I've made loads of phone calls. Thanks very much, Jason.
I've made a phone call before. So I phoned him and he was like, you're right. And we just talked about influences and stuff. I talked to him a lot about folk music because that's what I was into at the time. I hadn't crossed over into electronic music yet. That happened while I was working with Ben from raving. So it was when I was like, we'd already got together. And then I was raving. And then I was like, hang on a minute, this whole acoustic thing is not the way forward.
Yeah.
This is not the way forward. But yeah, that collaboration, I guess, was kind of the only one really that's ever kind of worked.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really very good at collaborating with people. I'm not going to lie. I think I'm really good at, you know, recently, I'm not going to say who, but somebody played me some tracks that they'd done that I really liked. And it's quite rare for me to have that. And I was like, oh, I really want to write some melodies over this. So I'm doing that, but I won't say who it's for. And
writing
I really,
for somebody else?
Just like not writing. No, I couldn't do that. Oh, no. That could never work. I'll never let anybody sing my lyrics. Forget it.
It's would you write melodies for other people? Would you write like chords?
I don't
songs?
Know how, because if I write something that I like, I'm having it. You know, I just don't know how I'd ever give it to somebody.
You can't like have like a B class of songs.
There's
so
no
go...
B class. They're all the same class. Mm-hmm. I'm just, I hate that. I'm not being a wanker.
No,
but
I
like,
love that.
Yeah, they're all good.
100%
like they're
that.
All quality, and I don't write them unless they are. I don't have all these crap songs in a bin somewhere. Do you know what I mean? I just won't waste my time with it unless it's cool. I don't even bother finishing it or starting it. I think, you know, but I think I really like lending my voice to other things. I like being asked to be a singer on things. I really enjoy that, being asked to use my texture. I think that's a really, really nice thing to be asked. It's a nice compliment. And I love that. And that's what Tyler asked of me, and that's what Kanye asked of me. It's what New Order asked of me. It's, you know, I wrote actually a bit for Chromeo, but I think that's something I really like. But no, in terms of collaboration, I find it really difficult, mainly because I've already got way too many ideas. And then I just find that I'll just end up taking over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, I prefer my idea.
Yeah, exactly. We don't have to make this a fight if you back down.
Yeah, exactly. It's not a fight. You could just leave.
So then like you and Ben parted ways in 2014, I think.
It was actually 2012.
Oh, was it? Right,
people don't fully get that, I don't think.
I think I just went off like what I was reading.
No, fair enough. Yeah. Wikipedia probably does say that.
So you jumped into the second record and then toured the absolute
shit
balls
out of it.
Off it.
Yeah. I wish they didn't do that to me. Part of the problem was that they then wanted to release the album in America much later, like a year.
See, that doesn't happen anymore.
Like a year afterwards. So then everyone was like, oh, you've been away for ages. And I was like, I've actually been on tour, you cunts. Do you know what I mean? I haven't been away. I've not been on holiday. Do you know what I mean? I haven't been like, hanging out in the Bahamas, like chilling. That's not what happened.
That's what people always think, though.
I know. It really fucking winds me up. I'm like, I haven't had a break for I don't know how long.
Yeah.
You know, every now and then I go and see my friends in the Caribbean, but it's not like I'm in a fucking 5-star resort, you know, having grapes fed to me or something.
But,
you know?
But everybody, like, you know, when an artist goes away for a period of time, everybody always thinks that they're sitting there doing nothing.
That's hilarious.
And just like drinking cocktails and probably
it's
like
mainly
lying
pranging
on the
out
beach,
about
somebody
how to make another record. Yeah, it's mainly what we're doing.
But that's generally it. Like, I think one of the most difficult things for artists I know from speaking to them and being one at a bass player, like I didn't write much it's like coming home from a long tour, it takes a long time to acclimatize to actually being in a house again for a while. And if you've been on tour for like 2 years,
at first you see every day is like a weird day off duvet day.
Yeah,
you know, you don't know what to do apart from watch Frasier, you know.
And you do that for about 2 weeks, everybody thinks you're depressed.
Yeah, you're like, oh, maybe I should leave the house.
It might be a good idea. But it did, there was a 5-year gap between the last record and this record, and you know, a lot of stuff had to happen in those 5 years of like starting an album, been in it, and then coming back and starting again.
Yeah, also when I was looking through the voice notes yesterday or whatever for this, I realised that the voice notes for this album start the same week that I stopped doing the other album. So it's just like I didn't even have a day's break.
Wow.
You know, it's just quite intense. And I haven't broken since. I haven't had a break since because I was like, fuck, I have to make this call. This is the right call. Mm-hmm. I have to do this. Mm-hmm. Shit, okay, I have to make another album. But I've been like that since I was about... I used to play Doobie Brothers when I was like 12.
Yeah.
And I'd never heard an Al Rogers record in my life.
Yeah.
You know, it's like Bowie. When everyone was like, oh, you look like Bowie. I was like, who's Bowie? Like, my parents hate Bowie. They never listened to Bowie.
Yeah.
There's not a single Bowie record in our whole house. Uh-huh. But I think obviously then they hear it and they think it must be that you've heard that and seen that and then you've emulated it. And it just isn't. It's like, it's quite
sometimes
strange.
It's just ingrained in you. There's a certain rhythm that's just like that. There's that like Bo Diddley rhythm that everybody always does. It's the, hold on.
Yeah, totally.
Look, everybody uses that rhythm, but nobody knows it's a Bo Diddley rhythm.
Yeah, it's
like
very
true. That's a rhythm that people go to. It's almost
totally.
If you sit down at a guitar or sit down at a drum, like at drums, the first thing that you strum is your rhythm.
That's also the beat to Modern Love, isn't it?
Yeah, I feel like I want to start singing. Well, I guess it would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. It is. It's totally that.
But like, if you sit down at a guitar, sit down at a drum kit, the first thing you play is your rhythm.
Yeah,
I think the first thing without thinking.
Yeah, of course.
The first thing without thinking.
And I think that's where the personality is. Like, I think that's where the personal thing is in the groove. And this is also something that I'm going to have a rant about it. Like, I think is what's missing. You know, like when you think about Stevie Wonder and you think about Prince, and it doesn't matter how old they are or how long ago it was, it's completely fucking irrelevant. The point is that what made them recognisable and still so recognisable now today is the personality in the groove. You can't hear a Prince synth line or guitar line and not know that he's got a hand in it. Same with Stevie Wonder. Same with Jimi Hendrix, same with so many people. And I think that, for me, is the bit that's severely, severely missing from now. Like, so you might have a band with a sound. You might have an act with a sound. Uh-huh. I don't mean that. Like, I can always tell when I've heard so-and-so's voice or so-and-so's voice. It's not like they're unrecognisable.
But it's the way it's
played. But the music doesn't have a personality because it's all made by 10 cunts. Do you know what I mean? Mm. It's all made by people they go into writing rooms with all the bloody time. You know, they have different people in there. They've got to finish a tune in 6 hours. It's totally, in my opinion, soulless. Mm-hmm. And also the actual arrangement of the music itself, the parts, the instrumentation is just, it's basically just intentionally personalityless. It's just a backdrop. They don't really want that writer's personality in it or that writer's producer's personality in it because it wouldn't make any sense and the album would be inconsistent because it's got 100 people on it. Mm-hmm. So it all needs to be quite plain. That, for me, is the biggest problem with music now, I can't see a bigger one. Like, because people are just like, I don't expect music to have personality or be recognisable or anything. I don't really care. As long as I like the melody for like a week, I'll listen to it and then I'll listen to something else.
But it's the difference. It's the difference between battery-fed chicken and organic.
Yeah, but the organic anywhere near anything pop music? Like, pop music can't just all get bad now. Mm-hmm. It can't just all be manufactured. Like, I don't mind manufactured pop music.
It takes a maverick to come in and save it. Like, pop music needs saving every 5-10 years. It always does. Something needs to come along and wipe the floor with fucking everything else. Mm-hmm. And that's always been the way since Elvis, since the conception of teenagers and like the rock and roll era of like the 1950s, something will come along and revolutionize with the wheel. I feel like the last year it was Billie Eilish. Like, I think like,
yeah.
I think she's
as an artist, she does it, but the music doesn't.
It doesn't quite
stick with me for long enough.
But her and her brother Phineas write everything. Yeah, they do. Themselves.
So at least it's got them.
And do you know what? Like, this is probably something that you'll relate to in your early days, is it like being in a duo at the start?
Mm.
Is it like, I remember I had a real long, bitchy conversation with somebody about Billie Eilish and the relationship between Phineas, because my friend was like going, yeah, but she doesn't write anything. She just like turns up and sings. And I was like, hold up.
Yeah.
Like, no, she writes a lot of it. She's an incredible writer, an incredible musician, and her and Phineas collaborate as a 50-50 duo. And he was like, oh no, she's just a pop star. And
he went
and watched an interview with her and came back and was like,
apologized.
Good. And it was about 4 months after, and we were really drunk at like 4-3 a.m. having this as well. And we were standing up in in my friend's house, pointing at each other.
Really?
And the guy stormed off to bed.
Brilliant.
It was like one of those sort of like, no, you're an asshole. No, you're an asshole.
Yeah, well, quite right.
Yeah, but
it's a common assumption, you know, if there's a girl there, she doesn't do anything.
But
you know,
that's like, you know, like stuff is leveled at female artists. Forever, really?
Yeah, totally, of course. I mean, I think she's fucking vibes, you know. I think she's great. I like the way she looks, I like the way she sings, you know, and I do like the sound of the music, but I also will be honest and say that it just didn't stick with me for long enough, or as long as I expected. Like, I enjoyed it, and then I was like, oh, I'm not finding myself going back to it, and that's okay, you know.
I'm just glad that there's somebody who is doing something a little bit different and looks and sounds and is cool as fuck for kids coming up now. Because then
I agree,
it'll keep it churning.
Of course,
good like alternative artists, even though the music's very sort of
But you still really need that, even just on a visual level. It's really important for young women, and also it's really important to just carry on that vibe of like aggression and fuck you-ness, and also being arty with it, you know, because otherwise the next generation doesn't have anything to be inspired by in that sense, and that's a problem, you know. Such a good mood the whole time I was making that record. I was like elated the whole time, literally elated. I was like dancing around my kitchen.
You know, I always wonder that. Like, if you make a sad record, do you have to be sad? If you make a happy record, do you have to be happy?
I think so. I actually do sort of think so, yeah. I think you do. I mean, actually, I don't know about the happy thing, because I mean, I can't write sad music. I find it really hard. I don't like dark music as it is. Like, I feel like the world's dark enough. I don't really need me to feel more dark.
But if you, like, you know, a lot of those disco tracks, it's you know, what is it? What's the Womack and Womack track?
Teardrops.
Yeah. And you're, like, dancing to it. Yeah. You're like, yeah, this is great. But you're also, like, really emotional and going, fuck, I'm going to cry.
Yeah, exactly, which is my favourite thing. It's that kind of melancholic thing where, you know, actually, that song is really angry. I'm really fucking angry. And I'm actually really annoyed. And I'm really upset, and it's coming out of actually years of, I won't go into it, but years of shit that I wasn't happy about. And it's my way of sort of just getting it out.
You do anger quite well.
Cathartically, yeah, I definitely do anger. But I feel like it needs to come with the balance, you know? Mm. So I'm like, oh yeah, I love this feeling, makes me so elated and so happy. But then I'm like going to sing about really sad crap over it. Like Automatic Driver's like, doom. It's so like, yeah, this is nice. And then you're like, but this is about like the worst breakup of your life.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So, but there has to be that balance for me.
Mm-hmm.
know.
Like Supervision, like as we talk about this now, it's, when does it drop? It drops in
like a month.
February?
Yeah.
It does, doesn't it?
February 7th, I think.
So like what is your plans with it? Now that you've like released like two albums beforehand, do you have a thought process going into an album or hopes and dreams? Or like what way do you look at releasing a third album really?
I'm happy as long as all the assets, shall we say, are good. Like if I get to create the art that I want to create and I get to make the videos I want to make.
Are you big on the videos?
Yeah, it's really important to me.
Yeah,
really important to me. We've just come back from, when's this going out?
Probably about a month. Time.
Okay, yeah. So we've just come back from Morocco to shoot Automatic Driver video, which is kind of like, I've written bits and like the general idea, the general location, the general, you know, what the props should sort of be like and what that kind of thing should be like in other videos. But I've never written the actual plot before, like properly, like gone, okay, no, actually, I know what I'm doing now. And like with Automatic Driver, I did that this time. And it's really crazy seeing a video in your head and thinking, no one's going to do that. And then you're like out in Morocco on a golf course going, how the fuck did I manage this? Jammy bastard. Do you know what I mean? Like it's fucking amazing feeling, especially when it really does actually look like it did in your head. It's quite, it's an amazing, amazing feeling. It makes me very happy.
One of the most difficult things for any creative person is pouring what's in their brain out into reality.
Mm. It's when people stop you as well. They literally stop you from doing it. Mm. It's like somebody, I don't know, there's not really anything to compare it to. It's not really like anything else. You can't really explain what that feeling is like. It's like colouring
in a painting and somebody stopped it and you've just got the lines.
Yeah,
and you're like,
it's just always going to look fucking mess to me. It's just always going to be that thing that wasn't right. And what I hate is when people are like, well, nobody else knows it was going to be like that. So, you know, to them, it's fine. And I'm like, oh, I hate you. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't matter. I don't give a fuck about what anybody else thinks. I care about like how I feel about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm not happy when I look at it. You can't change that. Nothing you say can change that. Yeah, so.
But fuck am I? Like the reason why they're making a video or making the music is because of you anyway, so it needs to be your vision, right?
Mm. Yeah, totally. I mean,
if you, I don't know. I'm somebody who fronts it. Like, if I want it done that way, then I will vocalize it that way, and I won't sit back and
until
that's
done.
Got me a lot of trouble over the years. professionally, emotionally.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It can be a good thing for you, but it can also be a really annoying thing because you can say the wrong thing at the wrong time.
Yeah, totally. And it is about getting a balance, you know, and also seeing the realisticness of a situation, you know, like, is this actually going to happen? You know,
well, that's why doing a podcast is quite good. Nobody can tell me what to do.
No, exactly. It's so much freer. Like, I'm not very good with rules.
The last bit of this podcast is really weird. I'm going to preface this, right? The year was, it was the 8th of January. No, sorry, it was 2009 and it was Halloween. And I dressed as you for Halloween in 2009.
God, what am I to see?
Right, no, but
I'm actually a bit worried.
What I'm going to preface this is, I got done up. So I spray painted my hair ginger, right? And I had enough hair back then to be able
to do this?
I just thought it was fun. And it was like, I thought.
One of those celebrity parties?
No, this wasn't, no. Like, so like I'd never done makeup before and there was nobody around to do makeup, right? So I got my friend who's like in my band to do, like, we borrowed makeup of somebody and did it. And the makeup doesn't look like you. No, it's not. No, it's not at all. I mean, to be fair, my quiff has come down quite a lot as well. But the makeup looks like somebody has tried to do RuPaul's Drag Race in the dark.
Ooh.
Right? But it's...
Oh fuck!
Yeah, my quiff came down. My hair's too fine.
Like a French aunt of someone's. Like,
oh, Muriel.
It's kind of not as bad as I thought. Also, does look kind of quite like me actually. From the eyes upwards, the
weird,
it's quite worrying.
The weird bit about it was like this is at a gig, and it was my first week in the BBC, and I was doing interviews for people at this Halloween gig.
Oh no!
And halfway through it, I was like, I really need to go to the toilet. And I was like sitting there looking at the women's and the men's. And I was like,
Which one do I go into?
So like, I went into the men's and then just like lopped it out at the trough. And everybody was like, what the fuck? Because I was like about 10 stone at this stage and very, very feminine anyway. So everybody was like, what the fuck's
really,
going on?
Really, really confused.
Yeah, I was really in two minds of like whether to show that because it's a little bit like...
I think it's brilliant. I'm not going to lie.
It's a little bit Norman Bates, I thought, like to show that.
Well, it's nice to think that I had enough of a thing going on that somebody wanted to dress up.
You
like
had celebrity lookalikes.
Some form of compliment going on there.
Yeah, I've got like I've finally been able to grow facial hair and I've put on about 3 stone since then. So I don't think I can do it anymore. I'm gonna have to like move into like sort of I don't know singer songwriter like
different territory. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. I'm just gonna move into gruff male singer songwriters now. Got to move with the generations.
You got to move. You got to move with the times, Phil.
Ali, thank you so much for coming on the Slacker podcast. Thanks for sharing all the music
no worries.
Good luck with Supervision in 2020.
Thank you.